Thank you, John Gakandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, June 7th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Harare residents say the suspension of Harare Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni indicates that the ruling party does not want MDCT to run the council.
It's completely disruptive. This is the most important city in Zimbabwe. It holds about 30% of the total population of Zimbabwe, and the welfare of the 3 million citizens of Harare are totally dependent upon the city council.
A High Court judge has dismissed the former MDCT Senator Matson Tlalo's application to nullify the nomination of Gift Banda as provincial party chairperson.
The judge said on the basis of the evidence which was placed before him and on the basis of probability, he has no choice but to agree with what the respondents were saying. Consequently, it means he dismissed that application.
Tourists have been urged to use plastic money in Zimbabwe as the cash crisis continues.
The need for usage of plastic money is so that people can still get the services that they would always get even when they are using cash.
And thousands of people visit a center set up by the late boxing icon Muhammad Ali to leave flowers and other keepsakes.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. Harare residents say the suspension of local mayor Bernard Manyenyeni, who was ordered to go home today barely 24 hours after he was reinstated by acting local government minister Professor Jonathan Moyo, is an indication that the ruling ZANU-PF party does not want the Movement for Democratic Change led by Morgan Tsvangirai or any opposition party to run the city. Our reporter Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Professor Moyo wrote a letter today to Manyenyeni indicating that he has been suspended for allegedly using his position as the mayor for Harare to block the auditing of the two companies, Easy Park and City Parking, as directed by the Auditor General following reports of corruption in the companies. Manyenyeni confirmed receiving his letter of suspension.
The circus continues today. I received a letter from the acting minister of local government, public works and national housing, suspending me again. This time, he is citing failure to deal with a directive requiring audits for council businesses, council ventures.
He insists that all his actions were above board.
I've got a letter here dated the 4th of May. This letter from the minister actually says, I'm led to believe that the suspended mayor, who is myself, right, had given an instruction that the audit takes place. So there is admission in the ministry or in government that I had referred this matter to the relevant parties for action or for consideration. Okay.
Yet this is being done to prevent the MDCT from running the local authority. MDCT Secretary for Local Government, Eddie Cross, said the goings-on at townhouse are now seriously affecting service delivery in the capital city.
It's completely disruptive. This is the most important city in Zimbabwe. It holds about 30% of the total population of Zimbabwe, and the welfare of the 3 million citizens of Harare are totally dependent upon the city council. And this deliberate disruption of the democratic structures that govern the city is absolutely unconstitutional and unlawful.
Manyenyeni said he was still consulting his party and attorneys before making pronouncements on his next course of action. Some lawyers told Studio 7 by phone that the minister has a right to suspend a mayor in terms of the law, but refused to comment further, saying they were not privy to circumstances surrounding Manyenyeni's suspension. A Bulawayo judge recently nullified the suspension of Gweru councillors by local government minister Sevia Kasukwere, saying he had no power to take such action against council officials. But another judge indicated in his ruling recently in Harare that the minister has the power to do so. Former Harare city councillor for Mount Pleasant, Worship Dumba, said Manyenyeni's suspension was politically motivated.
The issue at townhouse is all political, not about the competence of the office holders or whatever. ZANU-PF is a thieving party. What it actually wants within the city of Harare is taking money, land, and anything, even employing its own people in the city.
And Harare resident Yvonne Kachamtima said it was now clear that ZANU-PF does not want to see the capital city being run by the opposition.
It seems they don't need MDC councillors in council.
Manyenyeni had returned to work today after the government failed to set up an independent tribunal within 45 days as stipulated by law to hear his case following his suspension in April on allegations that he allowed the Harare City Council to employ James Mushore as the city's town clerk without following proper procedures. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
The High Court in Bulawayo today dismissed former MDCT Senator Matson Hlalo's application to invalidate the nomination of the party's new provincial chairperson. More from our reporter in Bulawayo, Shaba.
Hlalo's lawyer Dumisani Dube confirmed to Studio 7 that High Court Judge Justice Francis Bere dismissed Hlalo's application in which he sought the nullification of the election of Gift Banda as the MDCT's provincial chairperson for Bulawayo.
The judge said on the basis of the evidence which was placed before him, there is more corroborative evidence which supports the MDC party and even the fourth respondent. And on the basis of probability, he has no choice but to agree with what the respondents were saying. Consequently, it means he dismissed that application.
Hlalo has mounted a series of court challenges following the election of Banda during the MDCT's provincial congress towards the end of 2014, alleging that the internal process was marred by violence and vote rigging. Hlalo, who was expelled from the MDCT and subsequently recalled from Senate earlier this year, also lost his bid to have the High Court set aside his removal from the August House. Attorney Dube said he's awaiting further instructions from Hlalo.
We're awaiting the written judgment and the reasons of Justice Bere. Then we're obviously going to study them and with instructions to appeal to the Supreme Court.
MDCT spokesperson Obed Kutu said the opposition party advised Hlalo to avoid taking the matter to court.
Honorable Matson Hlalo had been advised beforehand by the senior membership of the party, even the president himself, Dr. Morgan Richard Changirai, and I remember our secretary general and even myself. We did advise Honorable Matson Hlalo not to pursue the legal route, because it was very clear that the route that he was taking was, with respect, not a wise route. It was not grounded on sound grounds, both at fact and in law.
Insiders claim that the rift between Hlalo and the MDCT reflects factionalism within the party over the control of Bulawayo and the greater Matabeleland region. Hlalo is reportedly opposed to the party's vice president, Thokozani Kuphe, who is said to be backing Banda. Kuphe was not available for comment as she was said to be busy attending some meetings. But Kutu dismissed these allegations as far-fetched.
That's obviously errant nonsense, if I may use that term. The MDC is very united under the charismatic and very able leadership of Dr. Morgan Richard Changirai. We all know that Honorable Thokozani Kuphe, Mama Kuphe, is our vice president. And we are very much solidly united behind our leadership. And any insinuation to the fact that there is a power struggle between whoever is, of course, frivolous, it is vexatious, it is spurious.
Hlalo recently told a state-controlled newspaper that he was not against any individuals, but he was fighting for the respect of the party's constitution and democratic principles. Reached for comment by phone, Deputy Provincial Spokesperson Felix Mafa dismissed as nonsensical claims that the MDCT is riddled with factionalism in the Matabeleland region. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shava.
The the heads of church denominations, which include the Evangelical Fellowship of Zimbabwe, Zimbabwe Catholic Bishops Conference, Zimbabwe Council of Churches, and the Union for the Development of the Apostolic Churches in Zimbabwe, Africa, are calling for a leadership renewal in the country. In two communiques, they said there is need for the realignment of laws, protection of human rights, protection of equal rights, need to address corruption and improvement of the declining economy and reduction of poverty. Zimbabwe Heads of Christian Denominations Executive Secretary and Evangelical Fellowship of Zimbabwe General Secretary, Pastor Blessing Makwara, tells Studio 7's reporter Jonga Kandemiri that as churches they are calling for urgent action for the vision they launched 10 years ago to be realized.
The main focus of these two documents is to solicit for conversation, you know, structured dialogue with all stakeholders, including the government, the business, labor, and civil society, on how we can be able to collectively address the challenges that we have vis-a-vis the Zimbabwe that we all want. So these are the two documents. The first document, it talks about the concerns of the church, and it highlights a number of concerns. The executives must help with the removal of political patronage and factionalism, and also for leadership renewal across the board.
We heard that you met with the Reserve Bank governor. What did you discuss?
That meeting was a platform for church leaders to hear from the RBZ governor the measures that central bank has made or is making towards addressing the current cash crisis, the banking queues, addressing issues of externalization of dollars within other countries outside of Zimbabwe, and then to be able to understand more of the idea and the validity of introducing bond notes.
That was the Zimbabwe Heads of Christian Denominations Executive Secretary and Evangelical Fellowship of Zimbabwe General Secretary, Pastor Blessing Makwara, in Harare with reporter Jonga Kandemiri. South African buyers visiting Zimbabwe to attend this year's edition of the country's Sanganai Hlanganai Tourism Expo have called for the introduction of a tourism currency in the Southern African Development Community region, saying this would help cushion visitors from currencies that are weakening against the US dollar. They further say that Zimbabwe has become an expensive tourist destination. The expo will be attended by 160 buyers drawn from various nations. Sugar Chagonda, the spokesperson of the Zimbabwe Tourism Authority, says visitors are encouraged to use plastic money as the Southern African nation is currently facing a cash shortage.
I can confirm that indeed the preparations for this year's Sanganai Hlanganani World Tourism Expo are progressing very well. The event will be taking place in Bulawayo, that is from the 16th to the 18th of June. So far we have received a number of international buyers and international media. They started the tripping into the country ahead of this expo, which is set to start next week. So far, we've received buyers from USA, from Uganda, Kenya, Italy, South Africa, and Botswana. And of course, we are still expecting more to be coming in between now and the 15th of June.
Your expo comes at a time when the country is facing a lot of financial challenges, especially the cash crisis. Is this not going to affect some of the buyers that will be in Zimbabwe at that particular time?
Certainly, this will have an impact. It will affect business. But of course, we cannot sit down on our laurels and see things happening. So far, we are engaging monetary authorities to see to it that they can also come up with some intervention measures so as to lessen the effects of such economic challenges. But of course, we still believe that it's also a way where we need to embrace e-tourism right now. There is need for usage of plastic money so that people can still get the services that they would always get even when they are using cash.
That was Sugar Chagonda, spokesperson of the Zimbabwe Tourism Authority.
Young people out there, are you concerned about the many issues that affect you and Zimbabweans in general? Rise to the occasion. Make an impact. Let your voice be heard, and let's get talking on The Connection.
we cover a range of issues that affect young people.
I am Tatenda Gumbo.
And I'm Tungamili Nkomo.
And we are the hosts for your number one youth forum, The Connection. Join us when we will be discussing the 2016 Mandela Washington Fellowship, which will see nearly 60 young Zimbabweans coming to the United States next week.
To get involved, send us a message with the hashtag TheConnection on WhatsApp. The number is 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
Zimbabwean farmers engaged in lucrative barley farming start reaping huge rewards.
And the Muhammad Ali Foundation says thousands of people are paying their last respects to the late boxing icon.
Stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is making history as the first woman to be the presumed nominee for president of one of the country's two major political parties. She'll not be formally named the Democratic Party candidate until its convention next month.
Militias backing the UN-negotiated unity government in Libya are making progress on the battlefield against Islamic State militants, but the government of National Accord is making little progress in establishing its authority in Libya's east.
And in a rare display of bipartisan unity during an election year, Republicans and Democrats alike have condemned presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump for his comments about the ethnicity of a judge overseeing a class action suit against Trump University.
A cigar wrapping tobacco auction floor has been set up in Zimbabwe's Manicaland province, where 14 farmers, mostly women, engaged in cultivating the lucrative barley tobacco, will utilize the facility for selling their produce. Burma Valley farmers are happy that the auction floor is set to boost their income, as they won't travel long distances to sell the naturally cured tobacco. Our correspondent Lloyd Amoyo visited the area and filed this report.
Burma Valley, situated about 40 kilometers or 24 miles southeast of Mutare border town, has a large number of farmers cultivating a variety of crops like bananas, vegetables, and of late barley tobacco used for raping cigars. This type of tobacco has a ready market in South Africa, Europe, Asia, and Latin America. The 14 farmers are using 10 hectares of land as a pilot project of cigar raping tobacco farming at Mapeti Farm. The project that began in 2013 is the only one of its type in Zimbabwe and second in Africa after Cameroon. Elsewhere in the world, barley tobacco is grown in Brazil, Chile, Cuba, and the Comoros. Zimbabwe's Women's Affairs Minister Nyasha Chikwinya officially opened the auction floors a few days ago. Chikwinya witnessed the first sale of over 100 barley tobacco barrels at the auction floor, where some farmers with a good grade of tobacco fetched as much as $5.50 a kilogram. One of the farmers, Lionel Guild, says the auction floor would play a critical role in cutting down costs of transporting the harvested tobacco while boosting their income. He says the farmers would increase the hectareage of the crop as and when the demand increases.
There's a big market. Cigars are very popular in the first world, in America, UK, Germany, South Africa. There's a big market for cigars. We've just got to produce a good quality product and enough of it to make it worthwhile. So this is the beginning of the stage. And then hopefully from here, if we double production each year, then we'll get into the marketplace. But at the moment, we're selling to a company in Germany called Von Eichen, who've been very good. They're helping fund it. They're helping to establish it. And they're using the end product. There's no point in us growing too much until we develop a market. So we're basically growing. And as we're growing, we're trying to find a market.
Lucy Machiki, another farmer from Burma Valley, says apart from being a money spinner, the crop is environmentally friendly.
The advantages are that we are not going to cut a lot of wood within the area. We are not even going to use firewood, but we are just going to dry up the leaves.
Her views are echoed by her colleague, Winnie Maisiri, who says they now have to only use simple methods of transporting their produce to the auction floor.
We market locally. We are not going far away for market. Transport costs, no. we have to carry, whether on a bike, on a scotch cart or on a wheelbarrow, to go to the market.
Alice Ziki is another happy farmer. She says cultivating barley tobacco gives farmers time to attend to other domestic chores while barley tobacco leaves are getting cured naturally. Dorothy Madara, a Mutare District Agricultural Extension worker with the Ministry of Agriculture in the Mutare South Catchment Area, says farmers are slowly mastering ways of cultivating and curing barley tobacco. However, Madara says there is need for more training among local extension workers on growing barley tobacco. Madara adds that farmers won't need to chop down trees to cure the tobacco leaves.
This type of tobacco, it reduces deforestation. It's acute, in fact. Yeah. I think that's the major advantage of growing this crop.
Mike Edinson, a representative of a German company, Fonacane, that is buying the cigar wrapping tobacco, says he's happy with the quality of the crop they are getting from Bema Valley farmers. He adds that cigars are getting popular in Europe compared to cigarettes, and this is likely to boost their farming business.
The cigar business in Europe is very strong. I mean, more cigars were sold last year than any time in the last 10 years, but that's mainly because of taxation. There's a move to produce mini cigars, which are wrapped with cigar wrapper. There's a tax benefit on that compared with cigarettes. So we've seen a big increase in the demand for cigar wrapper in Europe.
The farmers intend to increase their hectareage for barley tobacco in the next cropping season. Reporting for Studio 7 in Bema Valley, this is Lloyd Damoyo.
While Zimbabwe has registered some positive gains in terms of media freedom and plurality, many challenges remain. That from activist and Mandela Washington fellow Faith Ndlovu. She is one of the young Zimbabweans coming to the U.S. next week for the six-week fellowship. Ndlovu tells reporter Ntunga Milinkomo she is honored.
It's a great opportunity to connect with other young leaders across the continent, while also at the same time getting an opportunity to interact with business, government, and civic leaders, as well as academic thought leaders in the United States. So it's indeed a very exciting and enriching experience that I'm looking forward to.
Tell us a bit about what you do.
I work at the Voluntary Media Council of Zimbabwe as a programs officer. My work mainly involves advocacy for self-regulated media in Zimbabwe, advocating for issues of press freedom and access to information. I also handle complaints when members of the public have been unfairly treated by the media, among other issues.
How do you hope to benefit from this fellowship?
I believe that this fellowship is a great opportunity for me to connect with other young leaders across the continent of Africa. And I believe that this connection with other young leaders across the continent of Africa brings with it opportunities for regional linkage, for regional solidarity, in terms of promoting freedom of expression, in terms of promoting media freedom, not only in Zimbabwe, but even across the continent. I believe that this will contribute to strengthening my work around promoting a free and an accountable media in Zimbabwe.
Tell us more about the media environment in Zimbabwe at the moment. How would you characterize it?
What I would say about the current media environment in Zimbabwe is that we all acknowledge that there are incremental changes or incremental gains that have been achieved. Of course, with the major ones being Section 61 and 62 on media freedom and access to information. And we also cannot ignore the fact that about the 8 commercial radio stations that were recently licensed, even though only 2 are currently operational. But of course, it's not yet over because there's still a need for a change in culture, the culture of impunity against the media, even issues to do with political interference in the media.
And that was a Mandela Washington fellow and media freedom advocate Faith Ndlovu on the line with reporter Ntunga Milinkomo from Harare.
And in sports news, Muhammad Ali may be gone, but his legacy lives on. One place that is keeping his memory alive is the center that Muhammad Ali established with his wife, Lonnie, 10 years ago in Louisville, Kentucky, here in the United States. The president and chief executive of the center, Donald Lasser says thousands have been visiting the center since the news of Ali's death broke on Friday to leave flowers and other keepsakes. He tells Studio 7 Simiake Mwakalele that Muhammad Ali was born Cassius Clay internationally, did not want the center to be a boxing museum, but rather a place that reflected the principle by which he lived.
Muhammad and Lani wanted the center to inspire people. And Muhammad lived by a set of principles that made him who he was. And so the center is based, for the most part, on Muhammad's six core principles: dedication, confidence, conviction, spirituality, respect, and giving.
Did he come there a lot?
He came to the center on many, many occasions. One of his favorite things to do would be to sit on our fourth floor where we have TV screens that show his old fights. Mm. He would come and watch his old fights.
Really?
Yes. That was one of his favorite things to do.
So what kind of a person was he? Of course, for those of us who only have seen him on TV, many said he was larger than life.
Absolutely. Muhammad was always a welcoming person to anyone who wanted to be with him. I can tell you a story. There was a young man who was battling leukemia, and Muhammad asked that the young man visit with him. And at the end of that visit, this young man said to Muhammad, I am going to continue to fight this disease, and I am going to win for you, champs. And to your earlier question, when you were in the presence of Muhammad, you were in the presence of true greatness.
The fact that he had Parkinson's, many would think that Parkinson's really silenced him, at least verbally. So how did he communicate?
Muhammad could say more with his eyes than I could say with 1,000 words, quite frankly, and with his facial expressions and with his body language. So while he wasn't speaking as much, he still was able to communicate.
The earlier images had this really tough talking, you know, some people would call very arrogant boxer. Was that all a persona, or was part of that real? And did it put off some people?
Well, I wouldn't say arrogant. I would say confidence, which is one of his principles. And yes, of course, I'm sure it was off-putting to his opponents. Many of them said so.
Mm-hmm.
But you talk to any boxer, they will not go in the ring thinking that they're going to lose. And Muhammad always went in, and he knew he was going to win.
Donald Lasser is the president and chief executive officer of the Muhammad Ali Center in Louisville, Kentucky. He spoke with Studio 7's Dimiake Mwakalele.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. today, when hosts of The Connection, Tungameli Nkomo and Tatenda Gumbo, will be talking with listeners about the Mandela Washington Fellowship. A brainchild of U.S. President Barack Obama will be featuring some of the beneficiaries of the program.
If you wish to join the show, call us at 001-202-619-2077. The number again, 001-202-619-2077.
Or you can send us a message on our WhatsApp, and the number is 001-202-465-0318.
Before we recap, please note that we'll also be live streaming on all our Facebook pages. So join us on VOA Shona, VOA Ndebele, and Studio 7.
And now, a quick recap of today's top stories.
Harare residents say the suspension of Harare Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni indicates that the ruling party does not want MDCT to run the council.
A High Court judge has dismissed former MDCT Senator Matson Tlalo's application to nullify the nomination of Gift Banda as provincial party chairperson.
Tourists have been urged to use plastic money in Zimbabwe as the cash crisis continues.
That's our broadcast this evening.
Stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Chris Gande. I'm Marvelous Mklanga Nyahuye, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.
That's it for tonight. Please do stand by for the Ndebele News Bulletin.